Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemennerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Hello, movies, our old friend. We've come to escape with you again. And when the Wilhelm screams are peaking, and the robot voices speaking, and the screen that once was silent night, but flickered bright, now echoes with the sounds of autonomous sensory meridian responses. Yes! That's right. Autonomous sensory meridian response. That's ASMR for short. It's defined as a relaxing, often sedative sensation, perhaps, that begins on the scalp and moves down the body, also known as a brain message. It's triggered by placid sights, and more importantly for this podcast, sounds. But in nerddom, the sensations are brought on with familiar and instantly recognizable sounds. Okay, think the communicative bleeps and whistles of our favorite astromech droid, R2-D2. Think of the rhythmic hum of the Cylons. Think of the sound of the roar of the King of the Monsters himself, Godzilla. Or maybe a Spore latching onto a victim in the Suicide Squad. Yeah, we're going to talk about that too, don't worry. Even blindfolded, most nerds worth their 20-sided dice can identify these sounds, and you know what? They give us joy. Here to discuss our favorite auditory sensations are Mark Finn. Aaron DiOrive.
I actually have no idea what the hell he just played. What was that supposed to be?
Okay. The show is full of mysteries, and I'm your host and emotional touchstone, Joseph Botinos. Welcome to our very special auditory presentation, as if the other ones were not, of the Gentlemen Nerds.
Hello, beautiful people.
Back. We're back. Yeah.
So we're sort of back. Yes.
Yeah. Very strange. Ladies and gentlemen, we were having some difficulty getting going here, ironically, with some sound problems, but I think we may have gotten those straightened out. Mind you, I did not touch or mention the mystic that will not be named. It's nowhere near me, so we can't blame that.
Oh, good, yes, thank you, yeah. The device that shall not be recalled.
That is correct. The MacGuffin that shall be nameless. Right. So, guys, we're talking about sounds, and when this topic was brought up, I got a little excited because I thought, well, I'll be honest, at first I thought, God, what a boring topic. But then I realized, then I said, no, wait a minute, this has got some legs to it, or ears, if you will, because, God, we all have, I could, off the top of my head, name like 20 different sounds specific to nerddom. Movies, TV shows, and go, you know what these, hey guys, you know what this is, don't you? And then, you go, oh yeah, that's a lightsaber hum, you know? Everyone knows what that sounds like, you know?
Right.
There's a lot to unpack here.
There is. And I'm going to give a shout out to our stalwart listener, Janice, for suggesting this topic because she was the one that informed me that there were so many iconic geek and nerd sound effects that do have an ASMR like effect on us, right? Whether it's the sound of the TARDIS materializing in Doctor Who, you know, mm-hmm. It's a sound that is so specific and so recognizable that it's a shorthand. It's an auditory icon, if you will. And I mean an icon in terms of a symbol, right? The sound of the lightsabers popping on and off. The sound of the doors in Star Trek's original series, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, those were their own things, man. And so we overlook sometimes the soundscape. I mean, we've talked about soundtracks before, you know, music. But, you know, you really don't get Jurassic Park, as cool as John Williams is, you don't get Jurassic Park without that T-Rex roar. The first time you hear it and it pushes you back in the chair and vibrates your sternum. I have to say, I mean, even though that's not that's a terrifying sound for me, now every time I hear it, I go right back to being in the theater that first time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So those things pin us in place, I think, just as much as smell and taste, you know. So anyways, I thought it was
particularly in movies and in TV shows, you know, movies and TV shows, obviously, unless you're doing a smellorama kind of a thing, you know, you have sights and sounds. That's really it. There are some absolutely indelible sounds. So you mentioned a couple. I did a couple during my opening. These are sounds that you go, oh yeah, I know what that is. You know, and going back to the beginning of sound in cinema, you know, oh, you ain't heard nothing yet, Al Jolson said, and he wasn't kidding, folks, because after that, my gosh, the floodgates were open, and creativity was the name of the day. You know, name of the game. Think about in the very beginnings of motion pictures, and I'm gonna go on to Universal Monsters because that's my thing. But in Dracula, they literally had moments of it was just empty, nothing sound, just like scratch. You hear the scratching of the sound disc, no music, no sound effects, nothing, because there was concern, legit concern at the time of going, we can't just put music here because there's no band visible. Where's the music coming from? Is the audience going to be like, wait a minute, why is there music playing and there's no band playing the music? Where is that coming from?
That's funny.
So the only sound that was in that movie, the only musical part really, is when Dracula goes to the opera and it's playing in the background as he walks up to the box to meet the characters. But you know, it was a brand new thing. You know, you go, oh, I guess we can just be creative and do that and come up with all kinds of different sounds. You know, recording animal sounds, lions, tigers, wolves. You know, the oft-repeated wolf howl. that we all go, oh, werewolf, yeah, nice.
Pretty much as soon as the talkies were invented, they had to start working with Foley, you know, what would become the art of Foley after the fact. I am drawn to, you mentioned the King of the Monsters. I'm going to mention the other King of the Monsters, and that's King Kong.
Oh.
You know, those were, that's a perfect example, being that it's the first fantasy film for the modern era, but also that they had to create a host of sounds that didn't exist. There was no sound for a 40-foot gorilla, and there was no, you know, they had no idea what a T-Rex was going to sound like. And so there was a lot of post-production recording there.
Yeah.
And I'll go ahead and tip it to you. The Kong's roar was a lion cranked backwards. They used lion roars and bear roars and cranked them backwards to get that sort of not found in nature kind of a sound. They thought it would be less identifiable if they played it backwards. So
interesting.
Yeah. I like when they do that, when they, you know, experiment with different. I mean, I know Chewbacca, same thing, right? Chewbacca is a combination of a whole bunch of different noises, elephant, seal, and God knows what else. So no, that's great. And by the way, yeah, sound is, in my opinion, just as important to your experience of the film or a TV show or whatever, as certainly the visuals, the cinematography, the directing, the acting. I mean, sound design is vital. one of the things that we, you know, carry around with us for a lot longer, sometimes even than the movie itself, is a sound. I mean, not to say that anybody would ever forget Jaws, but no one's ever going to forget the Jaws theme. I mean, no one. Even when you don't remember too much of what happened in Jaws, when someone plays that, you'll know, oh yeah, okay, I know what that is. And I know that's music, but sound effects are the same way, right? Somebody ignites a lightsaber. Ah, know what that is? And instantly you're transported to the world of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Somebody plays the sound of a Star Trek transporter. And I know what that is. And you're instantly transported to that setting. Sound is crucial. Sound is vital. Yeah.
It's funny to me because I think that sound doesn't get a lot of respect as a result of being an invisible art. You know, you don't notice it. It's like lettering in comics. You don't notice it unless it's bad. Uh-huh. And then when you do notice it, you see how atrocious it is. Yeah. But you can do, and for decades, as long as they've not had enough money to make a movie the way they want to make it, sound right. has been doing a lot of heavy lifting. There are tons of examples, but the first one that came to mind when I was thinking about this was the $6 Million Man, right?
Oh yeah.
They had, you know, they had $11 in the special effects budget, you know, $14.50, something like that. And so, they had to simulate a bunch of stuff that was way outside their pay grade, yeah. you know, at the time. And so what they did to get him to look like he's running in super speed was to, honest to God, film him running in slow motion.
Right.
And then what sells it, it's not the slow motion running, it's that beautiful sound, you know, that high pitched percussive sort of here's the deal: you don't know what it sounds like except that it sounds like Steve Austin running.
That's correct.
Like, it can't be anything other than that.
I happen to have, and to accentuate your comments, I happen to have from our friends at Kenner a $6 Million Man keychain that, when pressed, makes eyeball sound, and as soon as it stops, the iconic. Not that one.
There it is.
Yeah, that sound, that very distinct sound.
Anyone know what they used to make that?
No.
What is that?
No clue.
It sounds like a spring. I was thinking about it in terms of, like, you know, in creating sounds that no one's ever heard before. Didn't ILM go on record as saying that the laser sounds in Star Wars were hitting a corded metal, like wrapped phone line cable?
Yeah, Ben Burtt used, he found that he could use the tension wires that were holding up telephone poles.
Yeah, high tension wires.
He could hit them with various objects and make that. He would just play around with hitting things with mallets and metal hammers and things until he got the right sort of sound that he wanted. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
And it's funny. I mean, Star Wars especially. I mean, obviously there have been sounds, you know, famous sounds in films and shows before that. But Star Wars was distinctive for that particular, you know.
Yeah.
So many sounds come out of there. So many iconic sounds. The lightsaber, the TIE fighter roar, Chewbacca's growl, R2-D2's whistle. The sand people's, you know, burk, 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 burk. I mean, there's so many really identifiable sounds in the Star Wars movies. I believe it won sound design, the Oscar for sound design. Good stuff. It's good stuff. I was looking up some of the, in preparation for this, I'm looking up, okay, what does the internet say are some of the most famous, recognizable sounds from movies and such? And we talked about some of them, of course, the wolf howl that you'll hear in some version or another in horror movies and everywhere else. Now actually more parodied than anything else, where you've got somebody says something and there's a pause and they're out in the woods and suddenly, you know, you hear the lonely howl of the wolf to let you know how abandoned they are. But that is a very distinct one. The thunder, you know, thunder of any kind, and it's always the same. They could use any kind of thunder. No. It's the same sound effect of thunder. Young Frankenstein uses this to great effect.
Yes.
That was originally recorded for the 1931 film Frankenstein.
Ah, okay. Thunder. Yep. Obviously. Yeah. It's so identifiable.
Castle Thunder sound effect, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, no, that's great. The Wilhelm scream, of course, the Wilhelm scream appearing in many, 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 many movies. And then what I try to describe to my fellow gents that people I'm sure will recognize, it's the screech, that monstrous screech that you hear. You hear it in Time Bandits. I think the Nazgul, the Ringwraiths make that sound. The aliens in Krull,
Beast Warriors?
Yeah, the Warriors. Whenever you would kill them and their heads would crack open, they would go that very identifiable shriek that they used over and over and over again. So yeah, there's all kinds of sounds circulating for decades.
One of my favorites that I hear from time to time is the red-tailed hawk screech.
Yes.
Yeah.
That you know, they use it in Lord of the Rings, of course, and they use it, you know, but it's to comedic effect now sometimes, you know, it's like,
right,
they call me, you know, or with the oak and the eagle as my witness. You know, in the distance, you hear the hawk going off, you know, to create that thing. And that's the best part about sound effects. You could pop one of those things in and evoke all kinds of, you know, from humor to silly, or the Inception boom sound effect is used all the time now, you know.
Very much so. Or what's the other one? The boom, boom, the boom, boom. The
Law and Order?
Yes.
That is one of the most iconic stings in the world now. You can anybody can go bang bang and people go in the criminal justice system, you know. we just know to cue it up, you know.
Actors and the Wilhelm scream is a fine example of this. Actors, you know, they're doing their roles and they do this scream or they do this sound and they go, wow, that's great. And then the studio says, go ahead and capture that, and we're going to use that forever, you know, in different areas. Going back to Universal and of course my playground, Boris Karloff does this scream in Son of Frankenstein when he finds the body of Igor, and it's an anguished, pathetic, horrible monster scream of pain and sadness, and he just roars it, and he did it right there on set, and that scream, they captured it, and it pops up in all these Universal movies, you know, especially if someone's falling from a great height, or you know, the Karloff scream is there as well. But I love picking up on those things, like, oh wait, oh there's that, did you hear it, they did the thing, you know. At this point though, the Will stream is kind of a joke, though. And when they do it, they know they're doing it, and they know people are going, that's great.
It's not for people just to recognize, right?
No, at the time, though, I kept hearing it. Yeah. Because I'd watched these things so many times that my ears would bleed. And I would, you know, I'd notice that the stormtrooper sounds a lot like the Nazi, who sounds a lot like, you know what I mean? Like, there was always this, like, is that the same stuntman? Right. I just wonder, you know? I know they work with the same guys. Is that him? Man, he's got a weird voice. So, but this is what's interesting about the Wilhelm scream. And it's only personal to me because you know me. But the first movie that was shown here at the Vernon Plaza Theater was The Charge at Feather River.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yep. Yep. When the movie theater opened in 1953, they opened with that regrettable 3D. What's the opposite of a masterpiece? A minor piece? The Charge at Feather River. You know, when you're leaning on Guy Madison to carry the movie, if that's your marquee name, we've got a problem, folks.
Wow.
But that sound effect was used. It was used earlier, but they got named the Wilhelm scream because it's Private Wilhelm in the movie that gets an arrow in the leg, and in fact that's actually what it's labeled on the soundtrack list for the Charge at Feather River. But right before he gets shot, Guy Madison turns around and goes, "Hey, Wilhelm!" And then, shunk, you know, and then. There it is. And then they are absolutely overrun by the natives. So, so I have been trying to find a poster for the theater for archival purposes and for years. And every time one of them comes up for sale, it always goes for a little bit more than I want to pay for it because, you know, on one hand, it's like, oh, it's a part of the theater. It'll be so great to have it. On the other hand, it's the charge at Feather River.
Right.
It ain't the creature from the Black Lagoon. Hell, it's not even Robot Monster. It's not bad enough to be Robot Monster, and it's not good enough to be the creature from the Black Lagoon. It's just the charge at Feather River. And there's always some, I always imagine some bespectacled film nerd in a USC t-shirt on the other end of the bidding war with me going, I can't wait to hang this ironically in my dorm.
Another one, by the way, that I'm sure you gents recognize is whenever there is some weird alien insectoid creature, right, or like a giant spider or something like that, that weird And after them, every time they would show a giant, like, oh, look, it's a giant spider on Gilligan's Island, it would make that noise. Or, look, it's a giant ant or a giant insect or weird spider-like alien. You always hear that weird kind of sound. It's like, that's okay. That's the sound that all insectoid creatures make.
I always assume that when I hear that, and it's odd because they do it like in just jungle noise or jungle sounds. I'll give you an example. I was, and this is very strange, but I was in New Orleans at a bar called the Tropical Isle. And there at Tropical Isle, as you go, it's a jungle-themed bar. And as you head back to the brightly lit, black-lit, fluorescently painted jungle bathroom theme, the sound that accompanies you as you walk down the hall is that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm just like, that's them. That's freaking giant ants. I don't want to go back here.
Yep. It's great. That's another excellent thing that sound is used for, right? To let you know that the presence of the creature, monster, menace, thing, whatever, is there without showing it to you. And so, you know, it basically served this, the Jaws theme served the same purpose. You know, John Williams wanted to have a way to let you know the shark was there without showing you the shark. You hear the theme and that's it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Bruce is around. He's somewhere under that water. And it's very effective.
Another creature who had one of the most memorable vocalization was the xenomorph, an alien. When it got hurt, it made that weird high pitched, like a shriek or almost like a cat got his tail stepped on.
Yeah,
you know, a shriek of some kind. It was very strange. And then in Aliens, they come leaping at you, multiples of them, and they're all screeching like that. It's horrifying.
And the queen, especially when she's fighting the queen at the very end, the queen really makes that shriek whenever she gets hit or burned or whatever. Very distinct noise. It's a very distinct noise. So yeah, you know, cool stuff. It's cool stuff.
The first sound effect that I remember, I've always been fascinated with making sounds. It was a thing for me. It's why I ended up doing radio drama in Austin and, you know, all this other stuff. In fact, our intentional producer, Ben, was involved with the Violet Crown Radio Players with me. And Ben was also in charge of doing sound effects for several of the shows and can attest to the links that we as a troupe went to make certain things happen. Like Ben actually built the wind machine. that we used for our shows whenever we had to have like a typhoon wind effect. He actually built one out of wood and made a rotating drum. It was very cool. As a kid, you know, I was always monsters and everything. But I remember there was a lot of jungle stuff, and there was always in every jungle picture and every episode of Tarzan, there was always this really specific sound. I'm going to try to duplicate it for our listeners.
Okay.
Because all right. They're loyal and they care, and I get that. So this is, I'm going to try to get this. I may not get it right. I used to do it as a kid all the time. So we're going to, I'm going to try this from.
What the fuck did I just hear?
It's monkeys. It's supposed to be monkeys in a tree.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't do it anymore. Yeah, but that it was a weird thing, and I never heard, you know, I just never heard that in anything other than a jungle picture when they like show you pictures of a chimp sitting there eating a banana, and then there was some other animal in the background losing its mind, and you're like, oh, that's what all chimps sound like. So.
Well, same thing, like jungle,
in those jungle films, but.
No, I was just saying, a jungle sounds also have, right, the two very distinct other sounds is the kookaburra, right? Okay, that's right. The kookaburra. It's always in a jungle sound. And the other one is, for whatever reason, a peacock. Yep, you hear that sound? Oh, I'm in a jungle. There are peacocks in India in the jungle, but it's just so odd.
Well, it's because
Australia. So
the kookaburra is Australia. So who knows?
You wouldn't know that that's a peacock unless you saw it coming out of its mouth. Because everybody just thinks peacocks are quiet. Oh, they just like to show off their tails and everything. Nope, they mate for life, and if they get more than like 9 feet apart from their mate, that sound comes out of them, and it's the sound of the keening wail of the damned. It is. Especially if you're at a wedding outdoors and they're trying to do the ceremony and when there's one peacock in the tree and the other peacock can't find him. I mentioned this as an example as a wedding I went to and thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard in my life because nobody could hear the ceremony over the sounds of the peacocks. Oh, and as soon as the ceremony was over, peacock jumped out of the tree and the two of them walked off. It's like, you know, you planned this. This was all part of the show, wasn't it?
Sidebar, there's a restaurant in Austin, Green Pastures, very well known for their peacocks and peahens that roam the grounds of the beautiful restaurant here in Austin. And they are their best security system at night. If there's something going on and the peacocks get upset and they make that sound, it alerts the entire neighborhood.
Yeah. Wow.
It's great. If you want jungle noises, you need the monkeys that Mark made, you need a kookaburra, and you need a peacock. And then bingo. And maybe throw in a lion roar or two. And then you're done. You've got the jungle. You've got the jungle.
There's a very famous elephant trumpet that goes along with that as well. I've heard, you know, in the old Tarzan TV show. Open with that that trumpeting elephant sound. Which, by the way, going back to the T-Rex, Mark, you mentioned the creation of it. I swear when I was watching the very first Jurassic Park and that T-Rex made that roar, my thought went to an elephant for some reason. I heard a trumpeting elephant.
Yeah, there's definitely a trumpeting sound in there.
Yeah.
It's at the bottom of the sound. It's really good, though.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Nothing like it. I mean, just every time you hear that, you just go, oh, I know what that is. That's a T-Rex. There's no doubt. Yeah. Never having heard a T-Rex in real life, but that's damn it.
It's funny that's the imprinting that's happened.
And by the way, speaking of Tarzan, let me just jump back to the Tarzan real quick. That is the one thing that I always, you know, later on as I found out more about Tarzan and read the books and all that, you know, the whole yodel, right? The famous Tarzan yell. Which is specifically mentioned in the book, but not you know, that it's a yodel. It becomes a yodel. What Burroughs describes in the book is like the roar of an inhuman demon, You know, that terrified. When natives hear this sound, they're terrified. It is a terrifying sound. And it's just funny that, you know, Weissmuller or whoever, I actually don't know who's credited with that, turned it into this yodel.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's Tarzan's yodel. I guess that played better on screen than if it was, you know, some man just, you know, screaming at the top of his lungs. Oh, shit, what the fuck is that? But that is, I always thought that's such a shame, you know, that's such a shame that this sound was supposed to absolutely terrify you. And no, now we hear it and we all smile and go, oh, Tarzan. Yeah.
Well, they did manage to get that across in the TV show, you know, with him standing on the waterfall and then the famous yell, and then the entire jungle loses its damn mind. You know?
It's just the sound for me that it turned into that.
Yeah.
It went from something that was supposed to terrify you. Right.
Yeah, ironically, it just makes me smile now. I don't think, oh, someone's in trouble. I think, oh, right. Cool, Tarzan's on.
Exactly. And if we were in the jungle and heard that noise, we would go, oh, we're saved. It's Tarzan. But yeah. So it's to me, I associate, like, when I was thinking of what would this sound like, right? I think of the werewolf howl, right, from American Werewolf in London. This pained, horrific scream roar, right? That just, you hear it and it's unearthly and it's ghastly and it freezes your blood. I'm like, that is what Tarzan's roar should sound like.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's a good point. Yeah.
Right, it does sound like there's a howl of anguish in that werewolf howl in American Werewolf in London. It is so specific, especially when they're doing it the second time and it's echoing over the city and everything. Oh, yeah. You can tell he doesn't want this. You know, it's so good.
So again, sounds, that's probably my favorite werewolf sound that I've ever heard, is that howl, that unearthly, inhuman, demonic howl.
Yeah.
A dirge of death. Just a nice way to put it. Ghostbusters and their proton packs.
Oh, yeah.
Made a very distinct sound when turned on and fired.
Yeah.
That was another famous, that we could, if I was to blindfold our listeners and play a series of sound effects, you'd be like, oh, that's Ghostbusters. Oh, that's, you know, I mean, that's the power of this stuff. And I really, really enjoy seeing and picking them up in different locations in different areas, but there's some that are sacred. They can't be touched to be used anywhere else, you know. Yeah. And I would think that the T-Rex is one of them. I don't think anyone's going to take that T-Rex roar and stick it on any other monster. Just can't.
No. Right. Yeah, it's ubiquitous and unique at the same time. So speaking of changing the subject from death and destruction and mayhem, I want to talk about something a little more lighthearted.
Okay.
I want to bring up one of my favorite banks of sound effects of all time, and that is the Hanna-Barbera Sound Effects Library.
Oh, boy. Oh,
nice.
These guys had a limited amount of money to produce these cartoons, and they made up for their lack of, you know, big budget and can't have a full orchestra and Skakowsky can't, you know, direct it. So we'll get Hoyt Curtin and then we'll get five guys in a room. And those five guys in a room made all kinds of magic. And the stuff that, you know, as the iconic cartoon sound effects, you know, are the coconuts that are the running sound, you know, when they take off. And of course the atomic bomb drop when the coyote falls off the, you know, and it's funny because, you know, now that whistling drop has become so synonymous with cartoon character falling that you can't not have that sound. People have tried to do a different sound for it, and they're like, that doesn't sound like, why don't you do the whistle? the Hanna-Barbera's sci-fi cartoons, the Fantastic Four and Space Ghost and Johnny Quest, they used the same bank of sound effects with great effect. And I absolutely adore the laser sounds that are in the Fantastic Four and Space Ghost when he fires his power band.
Oh, you know, yeah, yeah. That, it's a that, very distinctive sound.
Yeah. Kind of thing, yeah. You know, and there's just so many really good, just really specific sounds. Oh, whenever he turned invisible, there was always a
whoom. Yes, and yeah. Yep.
And the Invisible Girl, of course, did the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I loved, as a kid, you know, that was another thing, you know, because the music was part of this experience. And then just, you know, you'd get those, you'd hear those sounds and you'd come running, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The Herculoids also, they had a lot of those sound effects. And then Gleep, the one, yes, when they would stretch, when Gleep or Gloop would stretch, that sound as they stretched. And that's the other thing, too, is like it's hard to hear those sounds and not think, well, of course that's something stretching, you know?
Right.
You've come to accept those sounds so well. That, like Mark was saying, something is falling. We got to have the whistling noise, you know? It seems weird when we don't. Yeah.
It does. It is conspicuous by its absence when they don't use it. And you can't get away from it. It's so funny because there's just some great, and people have tried, you know, there's current sound effects people that are working and, you know, more and more they find, you know, these old sounds work just fine. You know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel because they did the heavy lifting for us. And in some cases, there's archivists that work with this stuff because, of course, there is. And and they've tried to research how some of these sounds are made and they can't. They don't know how they do it. The Jetsons spaceships.
Yeah.
They have no idea how that was made.
How funny.
Yeah.
I can't even do it. Yeah. Yeah.
For that matter,
the flappy, the foot running sounds from the Flintstones.
Yes. That is a bongo effect it sounds like coconuts being hit or a mallet on a series of bongo drums. And then it's the ping, you know, right after it. That's the bullet sound. So
I'm happy that I grew up in a world of 70s cartoons and that I know what a schmoo sounds like. That's one of those things that I'm satisfied with my life. And I can honestly say that that's a big deal for me. Going back to Flintstones real quick, too, there's an audio sound effect that always makes me laugh with Flintstones. And it's musical. It's obviously done on a trumpet. But it's the Fred Got Busted sound. He and Barney are trying to do some harebrained scheme or whatever, and then of course Wilma walks in the middle of whatever, and Fred gets busted, and the trumpet sound is just this cacophony of trumpet blasts as Fred is reduced to quivering jelly in front of his wife. That sound always cracks me up. I wish I had that on a push the button sound and get that Flintstone shit sound.
Or they're, when they're tiptoeing, the xylophone.
Yes, that's a classic. Oh, that's a classic. Yep. Who doesn't like a good tiptoe?
Right. It's amazing. God. Again, that's guys, it's amazing how we grew up with these. I mean, just never questioning. These are the sounds of the world. These are the sounds of adventure, of fantasy, of sci-fi. You just accept it. Yeah, of course.
I have an anecdote for you. I mentioned earlier about the Violet Crown radio players. What we did in 2005, we did an adaptation of King Kong as if it were a Lux Radio Theater presentation. So we used the public domain novel as the basis, and I restructured it so that it was more like a radio show. And so there was a lot of challenges in that because we had to do dinosaur sounds and things like that. And I solved that problem by using a book called Mouth Sounds by a guy named Frederick R. Newman. And he was a gentleman. He wrote in the 70s. He came out with this book. I had it as a kid, and it weirdly got re-released that year the year that I was doing this. And so I gave the sound effects team copies of the book and said, okay, for the dinosaurs, we want this and that. And so there were women on stage in evening gowns with hair like Veronica Lake, holding a megaphone up to a microphone and roaring like a banshee into the thing to create the T-Rex sound. But we had to do King Kong dying at the end, and I wanted a very specific sequence with that. And so we had to do like three things at once. We needed Kong roaring, and I was doing the voice of Kong because it's me. And so I had Kong. But we needed to get the biplanes diving, and we needed to get bullets. And there was really not a way to kind of do that mechanically on stage. And so what we came up with was for the machine guns, we used drumsticks on literally a metal ammo box. And when you hit it, it made the perfect kind of rattle sound, that kind of like chain gun, you know, ammunition falling out of the belt sound. And then for the dive, whenever the biplanes were diving, I used a trombone and did a glissando slide. And we did it in concert. And so I was looking at her and she was looking at me, and I'd start the slide and she'd da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the first time we did it, and everybody was like, okay, this is stupid, but it was such a great production. It looked like a Spike Jones thing, except that then you'd hear it all together and people went, oh, wow. And so, yeah, so it was really cool. And so the first time that we'd do that, there would be this sort of like chuckle, and then very quickly everybody would get quiet. And then the spotter on the ground would go, the planes are coming back around again. They're diving. And people would go, oh my God, what's going to happen? It really is my favorite thing. We actually got nominated for a B. Iden Payne Award for like sound production. We didn't win, but it was kind of the coolest thing we did of all the shows that we performed. And I loved so much that production for the way we did the sound effects in it, and I thought it was just amazing.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing journey to sit there and go, what would it sound like, and to play around with it and fine tune it and go, well, if that's good, no, let's do something more. I mean, that's when the creativity of the artist comes out, because you don't have any other way to do it. What does the sound of a knife entering Janet Leigh's body sound like? Jeez. Well, I don't know. So Hitchcock very famously lined up melons, all kinds of melons, at a table. He sat in front of them with his eyes closed, and the sound engineer walked up and down the table, stabbing the melons with a butcher knife.
Oh my God.
And then he finishes all the melons, and very quietly, Hitch opens his eyes and intones, cassava. So the sound effect of a knife entering Janet Leigh's body is a cassava melon being stabbed.
Nice.
But I love that those types of those stories. Wolverine's claws
from the X-Men movies. Yes.
The snicked, as it was written in the comic books.
Yeah. Yes.
The snicked was created with drawing a knife out of a metal sheath through shredded chicken and turkey meat.
What?
Because literally, the knives are coming out of his skin.
Out of his hands, yeah.
So there's not only the snick of the knife, but there's a resistance, there's a pull, there's a dull pulling of meat, if you will.
Wow.
And it happens like that, but that's literally what they used. And I thought, that's great, because somebody sat there and said, what are we going to do here? How are we going to make this sound, you know?
Well, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that is one of the, you know, prior to, you know, 10,000 superhero movies,
right,
you know, when they really just had that X-Men movie, that was a significant thing. You know, the snicked and the popping of the claws,
yeah,
was such a big deal for that character. I mean, you know, it's such a signature move. And the fact that they got the snicked right,
mm-hmm,
because they knew if they tried to do anything other than that, it wasn't, people were going to go, no, that's not what it sounds like.
Right.
You know, even though they've never heard it until this second, they'd be like, no, that's not it. That's not a snicked. And
they've heard it a million times in their head as they read the comic. Yeah.
And Spider-Man's thwip is the same way, right? The web shooters do thwip. Uh-huh. And that's such a perfect sound for web shooters.
Yeah.
Thwip.
Yeah. Yeah.
To this day, they sound like that.
Yeah.
So
good. I love it when sound effect engineers come across something by accident, you know, where they reveal and they go, oh, how did you come up with that sound? What was that? Oh, it was the weirdest thing. I was feeding my dog and I was opening up a can of dog food and I inverted the can and the sound of it coming out of the can, I went, that's it. That's the sound. And that sound was used in Terminator 2, Judgment Day, as the liquid Terminator phases through metal bars. It was literally the sound of a dog food can being inverted.
Yeah, there's some great,
you know?
Yeah, there's great documentaries about that, about, you know, sound guys just walking around recording all kinds of different things. I think the lightsaber, they got a razor and they put it underneath a metal bowl, and so the vibration of the razor, of the electronic razor, the brrr on the bowl, is essentially what made the basis of the whoom, 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 whoom. Yeah, exactly. And so, but that's what they do. They go out and they just start doing, like, hey, who would have thought to hit a high tension wire with a freaking wrench or whatever, and then go, huh, I kind of like that sound. Ooh, that's kind of cool. That sounds like a laser to me. I love that sound Foley and sound artists do that. They just go around and just record all kinds of weird shit.
Yeah.
I have, I forgot about this until you mentioned it. When we were doing the biplane sounds for Kong, I needed something for the drone of the airplanes. Mm. And we had an electric pen. It was a vibrating pen that was like a toy. You turn it on and the pen would vibrate and it would make your lines shaky, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we put that vibrating pen on an empty cookie tin, like a Christmas cookie tin, mm-hmm. and put it on the no, it wasn't on that. We tried it with that, and it was too metallic. We ended up putting it on a cardboard box, and it was just the right drone sound for the biplanes. And so the whole,
how do you come up with that? How do you go, let's try this? I mean, that's the part that really gets me.
It was
is how do you start?
Part, right. I'll be honest with you. Part of it was like Fred Newman's book. As a kid, you know, he taught, you know, the whole thing, it came with a vinyl floppy. You guys remember those things, right? The little vinyl, and you had to put a nickel on the circle so that it would actually go on the turntable and not fling things off. And so this had like 75 sound effects, and now some of them were kind of goofus, and some of them were things that I was already kind of doing, like clicks and whistles and pops and stuff. But, you know, watching him engineer it, he'd teach it by saying, okay, say this out loud. Now, suck in your breath and say it at the same time. You know, and so by walking you through how to get there was a way for me to sort of deconstruct what the sound is. And as soon as I realized that, like, guys like Ben Burtt and not Dennis Muren, I forget who the other one is, the when they were doing, you know, when they were putting stuff together, that they were doing multiple sounds. Mm-hmm. It's not just one sound, it's a layered effect. And that's the secret to, you know, figuring stuff out, is to kind of listen to the different components. You know, you're hearing it all at once, and unless you're engineering it, you'll never not hear it all at once. But when you're trying to, you know, when you break it down, you're like, okay, that's a hum and it's a rattle,
right?
You know, and that's how you get there. It's a weird kind of way of thinking about it. But
yeah, is this performance available somewhere to be listened to?
We made a studio recording of it. and there are CDs of it in the wild. For a while, somebody was selling them on Amazon, but I don't think they're there anymore. I have a copy that includes a live performance of the song "Don't Shoot That Monkey Down," written by Mark Finn and performed by Ben Gibbs and the Violet Crown Orchestra.
I think you sent me, Mark, somewhere. You sent me that file. You sent me the recording of it. Either it was just the song, but no, I remember now because I was asking, you know, when I was looking into maybe doing a radio drama kind of thing, I said, well, yes, in fact you did, because you were like, well, here, let me show you what we did with the King Kong show. And somewhere in an email, I think I have a link to that.
You probably got, yeah, it's probably both sides of the show. We did everything but the Money Go commercial for the studio performance, but it was all in there, and the sound effects were re-recorded in the studio just like we did them live, so that was pretty cool. Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I would like to hear that. I would like to hear, because some of those sound effects, and particularly you doing Kong, I would be very intrigued to hear what you did.
I will talk to Ben, because we may be able to put that up as a bonus podcast episode.
Oh, yeah. That'd be wonderful. Oh, in fact, look, yeah. I see Ben just posted a link on Skype, and apparently it is to one of the performances of King Kong.
Yeah.
So there you go. Now you know everything.
Yeah, no, that would be great. I mean, if that's okay with you guys, that'd be great to put up to let our listeners access on.
I would love to hear it myself. I'm just intrigued when you're going, like, I'm going to be a 30-foot ape, or is he 50? He was 50, wasn't he?
40.
40. Dang it. Should have just cut the middleman.
Yeah, what's the difference?
I'm going to be a 40-foot gorilla. What does that sound like? And knowing Mark Finn, you know, he probably went out there and spent the night in some gorilla enclosure somewhere so he could really feel the part.
I did it as accurately as possible. I at the time, Fred Newman was touring, promoting the second printing of his book, and we had him at Book People. And I actually pulled him aside after the signing and did a consult with him and said, hey, so I'm having this. I told him what we were doing. And I said, I know that they did the Kong was a backward lion. He said, and I said, I don't know how to get there. And he said, why don't you just try the lion and change the pitch? Yeah. And so that's what I did. So the Kong is, it's not specifically accurate to King Kong, but it's my lion roar kind of cranked down
with a different pitch. Wow.
to look like to more resemble coming out of the ape's chest.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating.
I spent way too much time thinking about this stuff.
Well, you know,
but no, see, good sound designers should. Yeah, a good sound designer should spend time thinking about that kind of thing. So, yay. In fact, and you probably already know this, both of you gents know this, it wasn't from Kong, I think it was from The Lost World, but in Jaws, after Brody blows up the shark and it starts to sink into the water, you hear a roar. And it, you know, it sounds like it's coming from underwater. It's just roar. That roar is a dinosaur roar from, I believe it's The Lost World, the black and white Lost World. So yeah, if you did not know that, next time you see that scene and Bruce is all bloody and floating to the bottom, listen carefully, you will hear a roar. And
that's cool.
That is a dinosaur roar from The Lost World. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Oh, I love it. That's too good.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, of course, obviously, this blown-up shark would never make this roar, but no, you have to have that sound effect in there. It just adds something to the mystique of this creature. You know that, oh, it's defeated and it roars as it goes down into the murky depths. Yeah, it's so good. I was trying to think of, like, just off the top of my head, like, okay, top sound effects of all time, like, everybody recognizes. And we've talked about a lot of them, you know, the transporter, the lightsaber, Darth Vader's breathing, you know, just some very recognizable sound effects. It'd be interesting to see if listeners can leave comments as far as, like, what about this or what about this? Or I remember this sound. Just whatever you think is the most iconic sound that you can remember growing up from a movie, yeah, a TV show, anything. You know, what are the sound effects that immediately, when I say name a famous sound effect, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
The creature from the Black Lagoon.
That, really? That is the first one?
His roar. I've never heard before or since. Nothing quite evokes that Gilman like the roar. And it's kind of a throaty, it's kind of a low throaty roar that he does when he comes up out of the water and he makes his sound. And as a kid, that used to terrify me.
Yeah.
It wasn't Dracula. He wasn't the Wolfman. He wasn't the, you know, silent Kairos dragging his leg across the night. No, this was a beast from the Devonian era, and it comes up and it makes that roar, and then it paws you with its great clam digger hands digging its suction cup palm into your face. That's horrifying.
Yep.
That was its own thing. The roar of the creature from the Black Lagoon. I got to say, that's unique to me.
No, that's a great one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we did hit a lot of them, and you know, most of the ones that give me pleasure in an ASMR kind of way are all out of, like, classic Trek and early Star Wars, right? Those are the ones that just always, they make me smile. I get this sense of adventure every time I hear the, you know, energize, and then the. It's just that such a great, I love that there's it's almost like a wind up effect to it. But there's a specific sound that the Thing makes, John Carpenter's. It happens more than once in the movie. It's that hissing sound with the kind of a sprinkler sound kind of in the background behind it. It's a really kind of a weird sibilant percussive sound at the same time that it doesn't sound right. Like, it doesn't sound like a thing that you've ever heard before, which is, of course, you know, the point. I the other ones that give me just pleasure are the Hanna-Barbera sound effects. Specifically the ones for Space Ghost. I adore those. Right. That sound library and Johnny Quest, all of the stuff that the flying cars for Johnny Quest are sound like this. They're like the Jetson cars, only not as fast. So they've still got that thing behind them, you know. And, of course, the electronic eye of Dr. Zen.
Dr. Zen's electronic eye,
The big spider eye.
The big spider eye,
when the frogmen are attacking the Sargasso wreck, and they're in their quote unquote frogman outfits, which are, you know, they look like baggy creature from the Black Lagoon. and Race trains the laser on their ship. It's Space Ghost's laser, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a sound that I always identify with. Oh, something's about to get blown up.
Right.
You know? Yeah. The two for me that stand out a lot are the Star Trek phaser sound.
Yes.
You know, that. It's so, so distinct. You hear that noise and you know immediately what it is. And then also the wonderful sound of, and I've always loved it, and a keychain that had it, the photon torpedoes. Sound as the photon torpedoes are shot out. That's always been one of my favorite sound effects.
Yes.
I'll do my second one now, and that is anything from the Walt Disney Library that's included on Thrilling Chilling Sounds of the Haunted House.
Of course.
That recording of all the ghosts, the rattling chains, the angry cat, the dogs baying on the moors, just anything in that, which you could hear in the Haunted Mansion when you ride the ride. You could see it in the Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, or hear it there. You could in Darby O'Gill and the Little People. I mean, Disney's library of sounds is prodigious, and most impressive. Quick anecdotal story. We're listening to Thrilling Chilling Sounds of the Haunted House, my wife and I, on a little turntable. Because why not? That's romantic. That's what you do. So we're listening to it, and during the opening, when the dogs start barking in the distance, my dog, Fredo, perked up, his ears cocked. He looked at the turntable, and then he started baying at the turntable. He just started responding, just baying at it like it was a creature. And at that recording, and really, just told me of the genius of these Disney sound engineers that they went out and captured these dog sounds, and they are legit dog sounds, and that worked. But speaking of which,
oh yeah.
The werewolf howl in the distance is telling us that we are almost out of time.
That is the best werewolf sound ever, guys. Really, is the best goddamn werewolf sound,
hands down,
ever.
Yeah. Full marks.
I totally agree with that. It really does chill you. It really does.
Yeah.
But this was fun. sound effects. Yeah. I didn't think we were going to get much out of this, but. Listen to us. Get it?
Janice, thank you for the suggestion.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And by the way, let us know. Leave a comment on Gentleman Nerds and tell us what your top five favorite sound effects are.
Yeah. Get nerdy with us, folks.
Do it.
We want to hear it.
Pardon me and indulge me here. I'm going to record the ending credits to the podcast we did before when I was having technical difficulties and couldn't record these. So I'm going to record them now real quick, if you don't mind. The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and written by Aaron Villarive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, and Joseph Fortinos, with additional material provided by Ben Cooper and Ben Nye. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. A reminder, an Easter egg is something recognizable hidden in the background that is not called out. Promotional material, logos, and Gentleman Nerds mascot created by artist Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Lloyd. Are you sure our money's no good here? When in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, visit the Nathan Fillion Civilian Pavilion, now available for cotillions. Our sound editor, mixer, fluffernut enthusiast, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron Diarive. The Gentleman Nerd's attorney is Dr. Gonzo. Lobot Lounge sculptures by Walter Paisley. Crowd control by Infinity Snap. The Wilhelm Scream is a stock sound effect that has been used in a number of films and TV series, beginning in 1951 with the film Distant Drums. And Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Bluehost. Tiger training by that bitch Carol Baskin. Join us in the Lobot Lounge when we next open, and please remember, be good to each other and yourselves. I'm Joseph Fortinos, reminding you all that, yes, Red Skull lives as a cosmic ghost. And McClunky.
I forgot McClunky, sorry.
That's okay.
Every time.
All right, that was good. I'm going to hit record and we can do... No.
Thank you all very much. You were very kind.
All right.